So I know that today is Father's Day, so happy fathers to those fathers we've had, to all who are fathers here. Today is also Trinity Sunday, and, well, the old quip that if you disbelieve in the Trinity, you lose your soul. If you try to understand the Trinity, you lose your mind. But one thing that we can't say that we do know about the Trinity, that even though the word is not used in either testament, that there is a plurality and a unity in the deity. And in that plurality and unity, what marks the very core of God's being and the relationships within that plurality and beyond that plurality to the rest of the created world, to you and me, is love. A passionate, deep, strong love that nothing can shake or sever. The love that holds us and all of the created world and sustains us. That we can know. And now, since this is also Trinity Sunday, I would like to declare one of the traditional doctrines of the Trinity a heresy. Namely, that God does not suffer. The impassibility of God. The reasons why it came up, don't want to go there now. But it's impossible to love without having one's heart broken. It's impossible to pursue justice and peace. It's impossible to experience the incarnation without experiencing rejection, misunderstanding, temptation, pain, hunger, thirst, and above all, the cross. God knows suffering intimately. And this suffering in God is also inextricably linked to that which we need so much in our world today, hope. So I'd like to speak this morning about suffering and hope. It's part of all of the readings that we have. Wisdom, the first of God's creation, which played before God, which gave God delight and joy when God was creating all the world. This wisdom, for us to embody it and live it, entails suffering. The truth, the spirit of truth, which Jesus gives to us and all of God's disciples, to follow that truth which leads to freedom and to grace, to speak truth to power, entails an openness to suffering. Psalm 8, which Brian canted so beautifully. In verse 2, the psalm speaks about children, infants, and babes. The particular translation that was used this morning comes from the New Testament, which speaks about the infants praising God in the highest heavens, but the Hebrew text doesn't say that at all. It says, out of the mouths of babes and infants, you have perfected a bulwark to silence the enemy and the avenger. The avenger, the blood avenger. That is astonishing, that the vulnerability of a child, out of the mouths of infants and babes, the cooing, the babble, the crying, the lovely sounds, they all bespeak vulnerability. And we cannot engage in our proper stewardship of the created order without being vulnerable, hiding behind walls and barriers, not able to open ourselves up to the travail of nature itself means we cannot be good stewards. And to be vulnerable in a world where we can get hurt is to be open to suffering. So you get the point that suffering is inextricably bound to our humanity, to our call to love. So I've just dealt with the Trinity. I'd like to read a poem by Seamus Heaney that brings the two together as well. It's from his The Cure of Troy. Human beings suffer, They torture one another, they get hurt, they get hard. No poem or play or song can fully right a wrong inflicted or endured. The innocent in jails beat on their bars together. The hunger striker's father stands in the graveyard dumb. The police widow in veils faints in the funeral home. History says, don't hope on this side of the grave. But then, once in a lifetime, the longed-for tidal wave of justice can rise up, and hope and history rhyme. It continues, but I'd like to stop here. In a number of articles appearing in journals and in magazines, recently talk about hope being dangerous to us. That hope somehow gets equated with the Disney world, When I Wish Upon a Star, and it absolves us of the responsibility that we need to actually bring about change. We pass on that responsibility to someone else, whoever that may be. But for history and hope to rhyme, for it to be more than this daydream hope wishing upon a star, it entails that which we in our culture flee more than anything else, and that's suffering. Back in 1972, Leszek Kolakowski, the Polish philosopher and historian of ideas, wrote, "One of the most important, though rarely articulated, characteristics of our civilization is its total rejection in the belief in the value of suffering. Ours," he says, "is a culture of analgesics in which all of life becomes narcoticized. But the narcoticizing of life is the enemy of community. The more incapable we are of bearing our own suffering, the easier it becomes for us to ignore the suffering of others, which leads to apathy," which literally means apathy, apathos, absence of suffering. And apathy is flat. But the pursuit of justice and of making of peace, the pursuit of love in which each of us feels beloved and in which our own bodies can become instruments of that love to others, requires, entails, the possibility of suffering. In our own culture, if Kolakowski wrote this back in 72, before the internet, before instant communication and instant credit, the possibilities of avoiding suffering have just skyrocketed. With consumerism focusing in and shaping our desires and captivating our desires by letting us imagine that we can have a world without pain, we can have instant credit, we can have instant communication, it becomes all the more difficult for our imaginations to say, I can, and perhaps will, and it might even be good for me to endure suffering. Now, there's a kind of suffering that we all need to try to escape, that of poverty, of hunger, of abuse, of disease. But there is a kind of suffering that for us to pursue justice is required. When we name and unmask injustice and try to resist it, there will be pushback. When we speak truth to power, there will be pushback. And in our world where we are becoming more and more polarized from each other and human communities being fragmented more and more, the possibility of us stepping outside of our silos, of crossing the aisles and the boundaries to someone else on the other side, of attending them not as a cardboard figure or as a one-dimensional person, but as a true human being who has desires and dreams and who knows suffering too, and to attend to that and to learn from them can often mean a betrayal of our tribe, a betrayal of our ideals and values, and even can open us up to disorientation because our identities might get reshaped. But unless we do that, we become more and more polarized. And the more polarized we become and do nothing about it, the more we deny one of the very reasons for the incarnation taking place: to stitch together a broken humanity. And if at the beginning of the nursery rhyme, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall, none of the king's horses and none of the king's men could put Humpty together again, it's God's intent to put a fractured, broken humanity together again, with love, with justice, with forgiveness, with repentance, with those things that possibly cause pain. And by embracing that pain and enduring it, hope and justice can rise. There would be no civil rights movement if Rosa Parks sat down on the bus, and when the pushback came, she got up, and or Martin Luther King Jr. and the hundreds and thousands who faced water cannons and bear dogs and police batons, who faced lynchings. Without that resistance, the enduring, the staying there, there'd be no change. And hope and history would evaporate. But there is more. Not only does hope and justice require us to endure the pushback that comes, but the very act of remaining faithful and enduring, especially if that endurance comes out of love for someone else, or even out of love for ourselves, something happens inside of us. We get transformed. In Paul's letter to the Romans, notice the progression. We actually boast in suffering, because suffering produces endurance. The Greek word behind that, hupomone, means to remain, to stay, to abide underneath the weight that's there. And when we abide underneath that weight that's there, it's almost like carbon under pressure becomes diamonds. Something changes inside of us. Endurance, Paul goes on, produces character. We change. We actually become the change that we hope we see in the world. I suspect that you may have experienced this, but I know there are times that I've gone through tremendous pain where I felt like my soul and my imagination and mind were being torn apart. I would never, ever want to go back to those times again. But I can trace some of what I do like about me back to having happened underneath all of the pain that was there. Character is formed and transformed. And then Paul goes on and says, and this hope doesn't disappoint because our characters have been changed, but also because God's love has been poured into our heart while we were underneath the weight. Our imagination and our heart has been enlarged to love and to be transformed by love. We have become better lovers. So on this Trinity Sunday, when so much of our society and culture says flee suffering at all costs, you and I are called to be, to borrow Bruce Coburn's words, lovers in dangerous times. Courageous when we want to run. And we need each other as community to give us the courage, to support us, to give us the tools that we need to stay there, so that we can hope. And that hope is not in vain, because we experience that change in us, among us, and through us. May God give us grace to be lovers in a dangerous time, and to stay and to remain.